Hi, everybody. During the months of March and April, we are highlighting the work of Rios to Rivers in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
Rios to Rivers inspires the protection of rivers worldwide by investing in underserved and indigenous youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and support them in their development as the next generation of environmental stewards.
Founded in 2012, Rios to Rivers programs have connected 234 underserved and indigenous students from 20 endangered river basins in 7 countries. The programs have included students and community leaders from 21 indigenous nations.
Rios to Rivers envisions a world in which youth who are intimately connected to their local waters and tribal communities are equipped to become the next generation of passionate leaders for healthy rivers and communities.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support Rios to Rivers this March and April. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
This episode of Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, is sponsored by Moon Travel Guides. Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel. Don't spend months trying to build the perfect trip when you can do it all with Moon. Whether you are taking a short trip, exploring a European city, heading to a national park, or traveling to South America, Asia, or beyond, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you.
But I gotta say that, you know, when I was in Florida in February, the wildlife watching in Everglades just blew my socks off. And it was largely because it wasn't the wildlife we had out here. It was all the other stuff. So like the day we bicycled Shark Valley, my niece counted up all the alligators we saw, and it was over 50. I mean, we don't have alligators, so it was really cool to, you know, it was, we saw little babies, or kind of gross, but, you know, big ones, little ones, as long as they were a safe distance away, I was fine with it, but it was just really cool. And then, of course, when I saw the manatees, oh my God, I about started crying. They were just so peaceful. I guess it's the best word for them. They were just beautiful. And then the birds, you know, we had one lake that was just probably 400 birds, all these water birds in it, everything from brown storks to ibis and pelicans. And I can't even remember all of them right now, but it was just, and it was so noisy. It was a riot because the birds were just making so much noise as they were flying around, and the pelicans were just scooping up massive amounts of water because there had to be a fish run going on right there to eat. So yeah, I was super impressed, and largely because it was all stuff we don't have out here. You know, so it was the uniqueness of that that just blew me away.
Well, we are very excited today because we have with us the one and the only
Rebecca Lomax.
Rebecca Lomax.
Realtor at large.
You saw that.
I did.
We did.
I did. It was good.
Yep.
We'll take it with Becky so we don't have to embarrass you. So we're very excited today because we have a very special guest back on the podcast. The one and the only Becky Lomax, author of Moon 63 U.S. National Parks, among other books, and someone who has become not only a friend of the pod, but a friend of ours over the last several years. So we're so grateful to be able to have another opportunity to sit down, really, rather than an interview, have more of a conversation in this episode that we're about to launch into.
It's been the year of all years when it comes to hiking, because we got to hike together in Acadia National Park and then again in Mount Rainier National
Park. Yeah, coast to coast, baby.
Coast to coast.
Yes. Yeah.
This was something that you did with us at the end of each hiking day, but I'm curious, like, could we start by saying, like, what was your favorite part of hiking in Acadia? And then we'll say our favorite parts too, and then we'll move over to Mount Rainier. Mm-hmm. But let's start there.
Oh, wow. I love it. I love it. Yes, we do talk about that every time after hiking, don't we? Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah, it was great.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that tradition of, like, we get in the car, we're driving away, and we just think about that
day. What was your favorite thing?
What was our favorite thing about today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Acadia. You know, I don't know that it was any one hike, but that pink granite there was just, I don't care if it was those slabs out on the coastal areas, like out on Scudic Peninsula, or up on top of a Cadillac, or the Bubbles, or Beehive, or whatever. Those slabs were so incredibly cool. I loved laying on them. Because it was just like, oh my God, I want every inch of my body soaking up Mother Earth here. And it's through this rock. And I just stunning rock. I loved it.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Like the pink granite there is just so, so special. I think my favorite part, okay, I'm going to say my honorable mention favorite part was like that one little like unbelievable cove we saw on the flying man trail, I think is what it was called.
Where the tsunami came in and we had to jump up and you grabbed my hiking poles because they were going to get washed away.
That's my honorable mention. But I think my favorite thing was the tide pools.
Oh, Shipwreck Harbor. Yeah.
Those were amazing.
I was like, well, this is all of the colors that make me feel calm and make me feel alive and like that I just want to surround myself with at all times. Like all these different shades of like olive green and all these little pops of other things. I just was like, this is it. Clearly, I need to live in some tide pools.
We hadn't really done tide pools before then either. So I think that was really special. Like just in general, I was like, oh, this is great. Like it's not something we see all the time. So there was something very mystical about that in its own way.
And what about you, Mike?
Well, I think my favorite part... It wasn't the getting up at 3:30 in the morning,
but
I think my favorite part was getting up to see the sunrise because that's something. I mean, we've done so much of Acadia. I had to laugh though when we were like, "Yeah, Becky, we've done most of Acadia." So like, you know, whatever you want, and every trail you picked was something we hadn't done. So I was like, "Well, stand corrected there." But I do feel like that was something. It's sort of like we've been to many dark sky parks, but we've never made it there when it's been a clear night without a moon. So we really haven't gotten to experience the majesty of the night sky in that way. But this like being this sort of celestial event that we were able to take part in, that so many other people like were there for. There was something so beautiful about just watching the sun come up. And it's like, I can't remember the last time I did that. And I can do it any morning I really want. I'm like 10 minutes from the beach. I could go and watch the sunrise. But there was something about being with you and Jane and Dusty and then all these other people and just experiencing all that very commonplace thing together. There was just something very powerful about that, like very renewing and rejuvenating. And mostly because it was probably that fact that we were all sleep-addled maniacs.
Yeah.
I loved that too. That was just... It was the fact that we were up on Cadillac gave us a different perspective than being down on a beach. And so you got to see all of that water. And then when the sun came up, there was the color changed a little bit on the water. And that was just so cool to watch. I mean, just beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Okay, so now let's move to the other coast, Mount Rainier, which is like really wild. Like inside of like a month span of time, we were able to hike together in Acadia and then in Mount Rainier.
Stars aligned there.
The most, right?
It was kind of surprising that all worked out.
Okay, so of all the things we did together, favorite part of that time hiking Mount Rainier, because you've hiked Mount Rainier many times.
Yeah, that was kind of my family park when we grew up and where we went. And I just have too many images in my head that were really good ones. I think my favorite one might have been the first day where we did the east side of the skyline and went up, and then we just wandered off trail up, you know, over snowfields and stuff. That's one of my favorite things to do, is kind of find nice places to go off trail and explore. And that was just really cool. I liked it a lot. And just the fact that you can, oh, here's a rock pile. I just want to go see what's over here. And so you can go do it. And the whole time, of course, then you've got Mount Rainier sitting right there that's just spectacular. So that's probably mine. And?
I think that mine was probably, I think it was getting to doing the other side of Skyline and getting to McClure Rock and just hanging out there. Because we sat for a while and we had such a great vantage of not only the mountain, but Camp Muir, all the people coming down and going up. I just think it was so cool to have that perspective, especially because we had toyed around with the idea of hiking up to Camp Muir. Ultimately chose to kind of do some more things that weren't going to totally decimate us. So we'd have more time for things. So yeah, I think that was, I mean, seeing Adams and Mount St. Helens, and was it Baker? What was the third volcano we saw? I can't remember. It wasn't Baker, right? Because that was
Adams,
the north
St. Helens, Hood.
Hood. It was Mount Hood. Hood. Okay,
not
it
Hood.
Was Hood. All right.
Yeah, in Oregon.
Yeah. Yeah. Seeing those four from that vantage point was just really, really cool.
Oh yeah. I think my one of my favorite parts was the screaming marmot. Remember?
That's because you're the marmot whisperer.
No, I did love that. I did love that. That screaming marmot in the distance. That just was sort of like, how did we describe him? He was like a judge holding court. He was like holding court and like out and just like was making sure everybody knew. No, I did love that. I think my favorite part was, I'm doing a little bit of a combining of a bunch of small moments, but the moments when like we'd all like get to have Becky Lomax nature school, and like we would be able to be like, hi, okay, so we're noticing that, like being able to stand there and look, and you're like, okay, so that is a glacier, but it looks like a rock pile, but here's why it looks like a rock pile, because the rocks have fallen on top and they're getting compressed, like that. Or like when we were able to stand there and see those two streams flowing, one was clear and one was really cloudy, it's because that was glacier melt. The one that was clear was because that was snow melt. Like being able to have those moments was so special. And like, obviously we're both, you know, we both come from teaching, and one of the reasons that we hike in national parks or hike outside at all is just because we're curious people who love learning. And so like that was always moments that feed my soul. Or like the moment when we were hiking up to Comet Falls, and we were like, why are all the trees like all like, have they all
chopped
snapped
off.
At the same level of tree? And so like you talked to us about, you were like, okay, so snow falls down, it gets up to a certain level, then an avalanche of rocks comes through and it takes out all of the tops of the trees, and then when the snow melts, the part of the tree that was in the snow is the only part that remains. Those kinds of things were so special for me and my favorite part.
You know, I kind of, when I hike with people, sometimes it's like, do they really want to know this or not? So I never know what to, because I don't, you know, I used to be a hiking guide and all you did on the trail was this, you know, talk all day long, and I'd be done and be like, ugh. And I don't do that anymore, and I don't really want to do that, but I love talking about all these little, you know, all the little natural processes that are happening and what's, you know, what's going on, and here's how the glacier is doing this here and did this, and here's the change that's happened over the last 30 years or 40 or whatever. And I really like that, but I never know how much do people want to know.
Well, we're always
here for the info.
Always here for the info. Always.
I do feel like the game or conversation we just had regarding what was our favorite part of each of those parks is a pretty good segue into sort of what the crux of our conversation is going to be about in this episode, which is really Eastern parks versus Western parks. I hate to say versus because it feels like they're in a battle for one another.
But Eastern parks and Western parks and how there is, you know, just sort of, you know, we're over here on the East Coast and we, you know, have certainly frequented the East Coast parks over here quite a number of times. And you're over on the West Side and you obviously frequent the West Side parks quite a bit too. So I'm very excited to chat just about like, you know, the things and the compare and the contrast of it all.
Yeah. And the thing is, they're all unique. So it's, I agree with you on the versus thing. It's really hard to, I don't like thinking which one's best type of thing, you know?
And I feel like that's just, you know, internalized capitalism to make us go like, you know, like one versus another, or like put things in competition with each other, because they're not in competition with each other. None of them are.
No.
But let's get started by talking about heart parks. This was something that you wanted to talk about specifically. Can you define for us what is a heart park to you?
Well, for me, it's a park that I go to that when I drive in, and especially if I haven't been there for a little bit, I drive in, it like grabs my heart. It's like suddenly I feel like, oh, I'm here again.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And I just feel almost enveloped in this nature right away, you know, and it's a park that I think heart parks are ones that you just, you can go to over and over and over again and have that happen, that feeling. And I remember, Mike, you said that when we met up in Acadia, that's what you said about driving in, that you drove in and it was like, oh, I'm here again.
There's something very, very special about Acadia. But I also felt that way when we were back in Olympic, or when it was my second time in Olympic and it was Dusty's first. I just like immediately remembered why I loved Olympic. It like took me no time whatsoever. I was just like, ugh. I get to be back here. Like, what a gift. What a joy. And there were so many reasons for it. But yeah, Acadia, I mean, you know, we've been to, I'd say like 3 parks multiple times, mostly our East Coast parks. Mm. Acadia, Shenandoah. Oh, sorry, 4. New River and Smoky.
Yeah, we've done those 4.
And then I've had the chance to do Olympic and Rainier as a second go around. You've been to Zion twice, although you didn't realize it.
I didn't know I was in Zion the first time.
So yeah, so for like, I feel like a heart park, I mean, obviously you might know immediately on your first time through, but I definitely feel like there is like a sense of like homecoming when you come back to a space like that. And so for me, it's definitely Acadia, it's definitely Olympic. Those are parks that have like a very special place deep in my heart.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel the same way about Acadia. Mostly because, like, you know, this entire journey that we're on here with this show, like, the genesis of it was at Acadia National Park. We have been able to go to Acadia many, many times. Every time we go, it is like, it does feel like coming home, like, every time. And as we have discovered going for a third time this year with you, like, we still have plenty to discover about Acadia National Park. And even if, you know, we had, in fact, done literally all the trails, there's still more to discover about all of the parks every time.
And the trails will be different next time around, or you'll see something new on it.
Exactly. And because, like, you're there at a different time of year, you experience it in a different way. Like,
everything's ephemeral in a national park.
And that's the beautiful thing, right? I do feel like I probably would feel similarly returning to Olympic, just because, like, moss is, like, my love language. And so, like, it is being able to be there with all of that and, like, those, all of the coastal, like, the pelicans and the, all of it. So yeah, no, I do feel that way there. For me too, I would also say I do get that sense anytime we go to Smokies. And that is also partly because, like, I went to Smokies as a kid a number of times and, like, it was always fun and, like, but we didn't do a lot of trails. My mom and I very famously did one trail when I was about 12. There's this fantastic photo of me that I have posted. I should probably post it on our Gaze account because I haven't posted it there.
I think you did.
Well, it might need a repost soon, but it is a fabulous photo of 12-year-old me in, like, this green windsuit.
Love it.
And it is so funny. And it's, like, fabulously queer. We lost the keys to my mom's car while we were hiking. And I took, like, a million pictures. And, of course, when I got them developed, I got doubles because that's what you do.
We did.
Going through them, we were like, I wonder if the keys are going to show up in the pictures, because, like, luckily she had extra keys inside the car. So the park ranger came and was able to help us get the car open. But, like, that's also a heart park for me.
What about you, Becky?
Oh, come on. You know mine.
Well, I mean, it's clearly Everglades.
Clearly.
Because you're a Florida girl through and through.
Through and through.
Sorry, I would never say that about you. Just all jokes. I'm going to guess it's probably Glacier.
Yeah.
It's probably Rainier.
And Rainier is probably also a hard park for you.
And it's, you know, I live right outside of Glacier, 20 minutes outside the west entrance. So I'm there frequently when I can be. And it doesn't matter. I still go in it anytime, and I've got that feeling. It just goes, oh, okay, I'm here.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. But I would also have to add Olympic onto my list because, you know, I probably did way, way more hiking and backpacking and climbing in Olympic than I did at Rainier. You know, I did a lot of hiking and backpacking and climbing Rainier, but a lot more in the Olympics. I just haven't been back there in a while. So I need to do that, I think. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll just meet you there.
Yep.
Okay. That sounds good.
Sounds good.
Yeah. For sure. Hey, everybody. We are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Hey, everybody, we are actively planning our hiking for this year. And so you know what that means. Our moon travel guides are out and about. We're marking them up and we're writing in all of our notes. We sincerely love them and we use moon travel guides all the time.
Moon is our favorite travel guidebook publisher because their authors are real people who live in and know the areas they're writing about like the back of their hand.
And we can trust them. From hikes to campsites to city sites to restaurants, Moon Travel has you covered.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings might take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel has you covered.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel.
Don't spend months trying to craft the perfect getaway when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you're headed out abroad, planning to take on the open road, or want to wander the trails of a national park, make sure to pack a Moon travel guide with you.
And through the end of 2024, our listeners can exclusively get 20% off any Moon travel guide when you go to moon.com. Use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's right. That is moon.com and use code GAZE24. And that's GAZE24 for 20% off any Moon travel guide in Moon's entire library at moon.com. And that is exclusively for GAZE listeners. Let's talk about some of the wildlife that you see often over in Western parks and sort of like, you know, the sort of culture around wildlife and interacting with them and how people can, what happens when people interact with wildlife?
Now, that's a scary question.
Yeah, it is a scary question.
You know, and the reason I say that is because I just look at the last 2 weeks of news between Glacier and Yellowstone, just those two parks. And it's been, you know, one bear had to be put down because he got human food in Manning Glacier. Another bear is en route to being put down because he attacked a runner outside of, or she, no, it was a sow and a cub, attacked a runner in West Yellowstone right outside of the park. And She died, I believe. So yeah, there's a downside to all of this stuff that is a little tough to handle. And it's like we get in the summer routine and that's exactly what starts happening predictably every summer. And then you get, you know, in Yellowstone, you get people getting too close to bison and then all the repercussions of that. And it's a little tough, especially with the big megafauna, because people don't know how to behave around them and think it's, you know, I don't know, a petting zoo or something, you know, to get really close to.
No, I think that probably is the case. I think people aren't used to giant animals like that unless they're in a setting where there's a glass wall between them or bars between them and the animal. So it feels like there must be some amnesia, like just like your fight, flight, or fright. It's three. I think
it was, well, it's fight. Usually they say now fight, flight, or freeze.
Okay. Yes. So I think your flight, fright. No,
nope. No, nope. There's no fright. Frights are in October.
Your fight, flight, or freeze, I think just goes out the window. Like, I just feel like it's like all of a sudden it's like I'm one with nature and I can do anything and commune. And like, I feel like then people get into trouble, like, 'cause they just feel like they're invincible.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Glacier for a second. Like, what are some of the very special wildlife that you get to see in Glacier sometimes when you're hiking there?
You know what's funny is people think you're going to see bears around every corner, and that's not true. I can go on hike after hike after hike and not see a bear at all. But what I get to see are some really fun things, like a ptarmigan the other day, you know, an alpine ground bird that's really amazing. Lots of marmots, seen wolverines quite a few times. We heard pika the other day. We didn't get to see them, but we were delighted to hear them because they're an alpine animal too. That's, you know, they live up in the rocks and they're part of the rabbit family, but they don't have the big ears that rabbits do. And those ears help rabbits dissipate heat. So the pika aren't capable, because their ears are so tiny, of dissipating heat, and they're one of the species that's probably threatened by the climate getting warmer. Because yes, they can move up a mountain, but at one point they are going to run out of mountain to move up and keep cool. So anyway, it's fun to be able to hear them doing their little eep across, you know, the rock piles, and to know that they're there. Sometimes I'll go poke around, you know, a big talus slope a little bit, and if find under a rock, you'll find a collection of grasses and flowers and sometimes even little fresh ends of trees, you know, the needles off a little alpine fir or something like that. And they're just there in a pile drying, and that's because they don't hibernate. That's what they live off of in the winter. And then, oh, and just to make it more interesting, if I look a little bit around their hay pile, that's what we call them, of where they're drying their food, you'll also find pika poop. And it comes in two forms. And one looks like a BB, and the other one is a little bit longer, like maybe a third of an inch long, kind of a little elongated. And if they run out of their food that they've stored during the summer, if they run out of that food in winter, they can eat their poop, just like a rabbit, and survive on that.
Had a feeling that's where that was going.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So can you tell pika are one of my favorites out there?
Oh, yeah.
That's why I like hearing them. I like seeing them. And they're cute. I mean, they're just the size of a big baked potato with legs running around.
We saw them. We saw pika in Tetons.
Oh, yeah. We did. Oh, yeah. That's right.
What trail were they on?
Paintbrush Canyon.
Paintbrush Canyon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Paintbrush,
yeah.
Canyon. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've seen them up there too.
When we were in Glacier, we saw bighorn sheep and mountain goats.
Right.
Mountain goats, I feel like, have such personality. Like, they have such, there's like a calmness to their energy, but I don't know. They look very wise. And it might be like the fact that they look like they are, like that they are like prophets from like another like time, like an ancient time. That's what I think of when I think of mountain goats.
Okay. Well, I would like to be reincarnated as one.
Oh, that's a great idea.
How about you? What's your wildlife you want to be reincarnated as?
I think I want to be a sea lion it's near definitely the a Channel snake, Islands. Right? Huh?
It's definitely a snake, right?
A snake. Oh, yeah. Definitely a snake.
yeah, right.
Like a black racer mm-hmm, snake. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's like, yeah. No, a sea lion near Channel Islands, I think, is okay. would be my...
That'd be
would
you?
Be me.
And Mike?
That's a great question. I feel like it would be some sort of bird.
Oh, okay.
Just because I'd like to be able to soar above it all. And then just like when I'm like done, just bounce, just out, take off, and I'm out. maybe one of those brown pelicans near Rialto Beach.
In Olympic mm-hmm. National Park.
So you get the water and you can do the land if you want to.
Those brown pelicans were very, very special. Have never seen them anywhere else. We've only ever seen them there in Olympic National Park. I'm from down south where we definitely have like Louisiana pelicans, you know, those sort of the white pelicans, but like brown pelicans aren't a thing that, you know, we get to see, at least from the part of the south that I'm from. That was really special and very exciting.
Very cool.
When we were in Grand Tetons, we also ran into grizzlies and black bears and I
moose.
Think brown bears. And I think like
two
they
moose.
Were and moose mm-hmm. and they were all sort of together
mm-hmm.
That was when we were texting you and I was like, oh, look at this video, these cubs are like running up a tree, and you were like, okay, so here's what this means. You were like, mama bear thinks there's danger, so she's sending them up a tree to go deal with the danger, so just make sure that you aren't the danger. And I was like, we need to keep moving on this trail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we happen to have cell signal in Grand Tetons at
right.
that exact
That whole spot. Front part of the range does. Yeah.
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 I feel like the thing that I've noticed about just having been to so many parks at this point is, I mean, when you think about wildlife and mostly in the eastern part of the country, it's, I hate to say common, but I feel like there are a lot of common wildlife. Like you're seeing deer, you're seeing frogs, you're seeing fish, you know, like mm-hmm. it's things
black
that
bears.
Like you typically would think of like on the East Coast when you think of wildlife. When you head west, everything changes. Like it's a whole different ball game. And that's the thing that's always a surprise to me when we're out west, if we happen to run across something, because it is very special, because it's not something that's like an everyday occurrence out east. Even if it happens to be a grizzly bear that is on the trail, that's not something you're going to see in the eastern part of the states. So that's always a big thing for me. It's always interesting. And I also feel like there's always something very special about the flora of the western part of the country, especially like when you think about the Southwest or, you know, any desert landscape, because we're just so used to conifers and deciduous trees here. And so our landscapes don't vary that much. And I think that is there's such a dichotomy of landscape, obviously, across the country. But like you get west and you can go from like, I'm just even thinking being in Olympic, we were on so many different landscapes just in one national park, or even Glacier. There's so many different shifts and things that you're able to experience in Glacier. Yellowstone, same thing. Just what a weird, strange landscape. And then you go to the Southwest and, you know, you're in Zion, where you're, you know, you're in a canyon. There's lushness to it, but then you're on Red Rock. Or you're, you know, in Capitol Reef across the state and it's all red. You know, there's such a vast difference of landscape and wildlife out in the West that we just don't have here. And maybe that you see a little bit more in Florida because there's a lot happening. Yeah. I knew where you were going. See, I can read that mind. But yeah, that's at least, and we haven't been there yet. Don't know when we'll go. But yeah, I do feel like that's something I've noticed. But
yeah.
Take it away, Becky.
Well, I agree with you about, I mean, that's why I live in this end of the country. And it's just, it's got all those things you mentioned that are just, I love. But I gotta say that, you know, when I was in Florida in February, the wildlife watching in Everglades just blew my socks off. And it was largely because it wasn't the wildlife we had out here. It was all the other stuff. So like the day we bicycled Shark Valley, my niece counted up all the alligators we saw, and it was over 50. I mean, we don't have alligators, so it was really cool to, you know, it was, we saw little babies, or kind of gross, but, you know, big ones, little ones, as long as they were a safe distance away, I was fine with it, but it was just really cool. And then, of course, when I saw the manatees, oh my God, I about started crying. They were just so peaceful. I guess it's the best word for them. They were just beautiful. And then the birds, you know, we had one lake that was just probably 400 birds, all these water birds in it, everything from brown storks to ibis and pelicans. And I can't even remember all of them right now, but it was just, and it was so noisy. It was a riot because the birds were just making so much noise as they were flying around, and the pelicans were just scooping up massive amounts of water because there had to be a fish run going on right there to eat. So yeah, I was super impressed, and largely because it was all stuff we don't have out here, you know, so it was the uniqueness of that that just blew me away. And that's, I love that. That was pretty cool. And then, you know, you mentioned flora too. When I was in Smokies in May, Great Smoky Mountain National Park, you know, it certainly wasn't the fall color, but the forest there was so different than what we have out here because it's loaded with all kinds of things like oak and hickory and all these hardwood trees that just were so a different green than the fir trees and the aspen and the birch that we have. And I remember hiking there and thinking, I don't even know how to say, I could tell you they were all green, but I don't have your command of art, Mark, to be able to.
Well, I don't know. You did teach me the word rufous this trip, so I don't know. There's still things for me to learn. That is a red color, by the way, everybody.
Yes, but I couldn't come up with the varied colors of greens I was seeing in those hardwoods because every single one of them was different. And it was just so beautiful with that. You know, it didn't kind of have the monotone that we have in the fir forests a lot. It was so green.
Yeah, I do. Now that you say, I'm even just getting up. I think it was, I'm trying to think of the hike that we were on in Acadia. I don't think it was the Bubbles, but it was one of the hikes that we did where we were up. There was a lake behind us and we were looking onto a range. I think we were headed towards the Bubbles, actually. Maybe it was the Bubble hike, but we were looking at the mountainside and it was the range of color from
the
conifers to the deciduous trees. It was so interesting just to see. We all stopped and like took a look at it.
Is that the Cadillac Road?
Right, yes. There? Yep.
Oh, wow. How fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember
Yeah.
Figuring that out yesterday when we were riding the east side of Eagle.
So, yeah, here we are close to the top of the North Bubble, coming up from Connor's Nubble.
That's right.
And we are just...
Research should be done about the difference between Nubbles and Bubbles. Mm-hmm.
I think you know what it is. But yeah, the trees up here, like getting a view of the sides of these mountains is just, talk about the transition of greens. Like the colors are just so vibrant.
And there's even some of the newer leaves mm-hmm. on some of the hardwoods. Mm-hmm. They come out with like almost a pink orange on them over there.
Yeah, even down in here, you know? It's like even with the lighter greens, there's so much variation happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have the deciduous, which are those kind of like lime greens. And then the conifers are these. It's funny where they like really intermingle up the side of this mountain, where it's like, it's dappled. As opposed to here, it's like these, it's like deciduous. Well, you can see kind of where the temperature line, right? Wouldn't you say?
Right. Yeah.
Like why the conifers are higher, even though there's some of the hardwoods that are creeping up.
And I would say these two stripes of conifers in between are probably on an aspect of the mountain that gets a little bit better temperature for them, or maybe a little bit better water for them.
Yeah, they may be subtle drainages.
Yes.
Where there's more moisture and cooler, slightly cooler temperatures as the cooler air moves down.
Yeah, because look at how flat that green, that lime green section is over there with the hardwoods. It's definitely different.
So I was commenting earlier that I know this area is known for its fall colors, but I think its spring colors
are spectacular. Spring is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a more subtle way.
Yeah.
And of course, the new spring green way.
Yeah.
I like how the dark pine trees are, there's definitely like the dark forest green, but then it's sort of like the tips of them become almost an olive green.
I think a lot of that's lighting too right now.
It's lighting.
You look at these guys right here, you can see their new growth.
Yeah.
Is definitely
brighter.
Brighter than the old growth.
Because there's one right behind it that is older.
Yeah.
Like seeing that variation of green. I just think that I get so gobsmacked by how big everything is out west and how different it is that I kind of lose that sense of like what we have out east. Like, and just, you know, it's obviously still very beautiful out here. We still have a lot, but it's just like the west is just incredibly massive. That's the way that I can describe it in all senses of that word, especially when it comes to the landscape. We don't have the range like the West does, you know? We don't have the height that the West does. So that's something that, you know, is always interesting because you get so many different microclimates in parks with mountain ranges, and you're seeing so many different sorts of ecosystems because of that. So that's always something that I appreciate when you're out west, because you can see so much in such a short period of time in just one park.
Something I love about going to the Western parks is after starting birding more and more, I do feel like I'm in a place now where it's like I can always hear every time a bird makes a noise, no matter where I am. Like if I'm walking around, like if I'm headed into the grocery store and I will hear the bird in the tree. I'll hear the bird that's perched on top of the building over there. Like it's just like, I think now my ear is just like attuned to it. And like as I get better at like being able to identify what those sounds are, you know, thank you, Merlin Bird app, because I'm like opening it and on it all the time. Like I've gotten a whole lot better about it. I'm like, okay, well, I know the common bird sounds that I'm hearing all the time. Like I know when it's a sparrow, when it's a robin, when it's a crow, and all of those. Then when I get out to the west and then walking in trails, then it's like, oh, I've never heard that before. I have to figure out what that is. Oh, I've never heard this before. I've never heard this before. You know, and like obviously there are sometimes like in Acadia, like we did encounter birds that we don't hear often that are in eastern side, and that was like so special. But we also like in Olympic, I mean, it was like there are so many new birds that I heard and encountered in Olympic just because, and I'm so glad that like I knew to like listen for them, you know what I mean? And I guess it's like now it's kind of second nature, like I'm gonna hear them, and now and then like the curiosity is there, so I'm gonna be like, well, now I gotta figure out what it is because I want to know. What about rivers? Let's talk about rivers for a second. I mean, we do have New River Gorge over here on the east side that like definitely is like an entire national park created by a river. It used to be a national river. We have the Delaware Water Gap National Recreation Area. That might become a national park at some point in the future. Who knows if it's going to be 64, but that's like an entire park
created around the river.
Based around a river. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say necessarily rivers in Acadia. There are lakes in Acadia. There are ponds in Acadia. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of other...
Congaree.
Oh, Congaree.
Is a park very much so based around
based
the water.
Based around a river. Mm-hmm. But like what I think is so fascinating is like how... Even in situations where we have canyons over here on the east, the canyons look totally different than the canyons in the west that are also in relation to rivers.
And what's the difference that you're talking about there?
Like it's just so green and so covered in forest.
Here. Right.
Versus over in the west when like you can,
like thinking,
you know,
of Virgin River in Zion, or, you know, the Colorado through the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Or Black Canyon of the Gunnison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's like, it's a lot less green, but it's so many other colors, and it's so many other types of wildlife, and and there's so much more rock versus so much more forest.
I also feel like there's more power behind those rivers out west. Like, and clearly, like, it just feels like the flow is typically stronger, typically, depending on, I guess the melts too would depend on. But I do feel like when you think about the canyons that are there and how tall those canyon walls are, how much that river had to cut through over time to erode. Erosion. Bringing you the national parks since the dawn of time. But seriously, I feel feel like that's a thing. That's a noticeable like difference that I can see and really think about when I think about rivers. I mean, you can also say if we talk about rivers, it's kind of hard to not talk about Gateway Arch being right on the Mississippi. And that's sort of like a part of that is a part of the park, or at least a part of the park's story. But I do find that most parks, there's some sort of water at play that's giving it a lot of its history, its features, you know, and just like continuing to add to the landscape.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing I would throw in for the rivers is that actually is more of an equalizer between the East and the West rivers is the rafting on them. And actually, if you talk to people that are raft guides and stuff, of course, everybody wants to go raft the Colorado through the Grand Canyon because it's, you know, takes you 21 days to do it. it's a big trip and big water. But back east in New River Gorge and then just north of it, the Gauley Recreation Area, the Gauley is like the big water of the country. You know, so you think, okay, Grand Canyon's big water, very big water. The Gauley's bigger. And yeah, I mean, not by huge amounts bigger, but certainly not as long to raft through it. But it does have it. And New River Gorge, you know, when I rafted that, we were on above class 4 rapids and they were a riot, you know, just totally getting splashed. I wouldn't want to do it on a cold day because we got quite wet, but it was just really fun and big splashy stuff. And you'd be coming over like a little rock drop and you'd see this hole with this big back curl wave coming up at you. And you just kind of went, okay, here we go. And it was like somebody had taken a fire hose on you, you know. It was, so it's, I think when you look at how the water runs through it, I totally agree with what you were saying about the different canyons and stuff and the different looks, but how the water runs through it, I think is the more equal factor in between the two sides of the country on that. Because you do have those opportunities to do big water in the east, definitely.
We almost did some
Class 4 rapids
with Grandma Joy. But Brad was like,
hard stop, no.
No, we can't do this. Joy was down. Joy right. was like, oh, well, we would have had
to
go it.
Right from that without being able to change and walk the bridge walk. And so yeah. We were sort of like, no, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want to do the bridge walk wet, right. Essentially was the question.
Right. And no, because it's, at least when I did it, it is so windy up there. Was it windy when you did it too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Very windy.
Yeah.
We would have all like gotten
hypothermia.
Ill.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Speaking of water, because I always am fascinated by that in a park space. And this is something I said when we were in Acadia, coastal parks and, you know, parks on the water. Like there's something very special about Acadia being there, being right on the water. I think if the ocean wasn't there, it would still be grandiose and beautiful, but there'd be something missing. I feel like that's something that gives so much to it. Reflexively, I feel the same way thinking about Olympic or Channel Islands on the West Coast. The fact that they are right on the coast or surrounded by the water really is what makes those parks so special. I mean, Channel Islands is like Ireland and, you know, Greece and I don't know, all put together. It's like the Mediterranean and the British Isles have come together and had a love child and dropped it off the coast of California. But there's something so magical about that. And, you know, we've yet to do the Florida parks, which obviously there's a lot of water involved there on the coast. And if we think about coasts, even in the Great Lakes, I mean, I know that we're planning a Voyager's trip somehow.
Yes,
in
we
our
are.
Minds. And even Isle Royale, those are parks that we haven't done. But it's just, I do find that there is something, and maybe it's just having grown up on the coast and you can kind of say the same thing. That's sort of like a heart park sort of thing. It's like having the ocean near, there's something very special about that. And don't get me wrong, I love like the 7 days we spent in Glacier or, you know, anywhere in the Southwest, there's something so magical about those spaces. But the ocean is like it ties it all together for me. So I think I have like an affinity in spaces like that even more so. And I find that there's something beautiful about that. And just being on the water like that. So,
you know, I would have to, just talking about water and coastal parks, very different than Acadia or Olympic, or probably even Channel Islands, is U.S. Virgin Island National Park. Because when we were snorkeling there, oh, my land. The water clarity was so beyond what I'd ever seen in, like, snorkeling in Hawaii or something like that, or the Gulf of Mexico or whatever. It just was so clear. And just being able to be in the water, and it's warm water, and, you know, snorkeling and watching a turtle below you, you know, kind of moving along or swimming along, or all the fish and stuff. It was just really special. So I get what you're saying there, but I think there's also another part too, when you're actually in it, that's really pretty incredible.
I look forward to doing some of those Florida parks to, like, engage with water in that way. Because I remember, like, growing up in Biloxi, which is where I grew up, Gulfport, Biloxi, all of the locals knew, it's like, yeah, the beach is pretty, just don't get in the water because the water is gross. Except for on the other side of the barrier islands. On the other side of the barrier islands, it was like the water was clear and beautiful, and there were waves, and it was just a dream. But essentially what was happening is, like, between all these barrier islands that we had, like, a few miles off the coast of the beach and the beach, debris from hurricanes just gets stuck in that area. And so the water is just like all the bad stuff gets stuck there. And then so it's like all the good stuff's on the, so you have to get to the other side of a barrier island in order to, like, growing up, it was very commonplace for people to go out to those barrier islands on weekends all the time. So, like, that was something that I did growing up as a kid. And so, like, coastline is such a, I agree with Mike, it's a very heart park feeling. So, like, when we went to Olympic and, like, we would take those hikes, like, through the beautiful temperate rainforest out onto the beach to get to, like, that coastal experience, like, that coastal experience was different than anything I've ever seen, ever. And, like, I grew up on the Gulf Coast, and now I live, like, on the Atlantic coast here in New Jersey. And, like, I've seen the Atlantic on many coastlines, you know, like, I've seen it from Cape Cod, I've seen it from Acadia, I've seen it, but, like, seeing it over there in off the shore, on the shores of Acadia National Park, was different than anything I've experienced. Like, that's the first time I ever saw, like, those giant shot up rock croppings that are also islands that also have trees on them. What's
that? You said Acadia. You mean Olympic.
I mean Olympic. Yeah, I mean
so you're
Olympic.
Talking about, like, the stacks.
I'm talking,
yeah, the sea stacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seeing those sea stacks was so incredible.
Oh, the sea stacks.
And, like, being the able to stacks, see all those starfish, like, inside of all pools. Of those tide pools, mm-hmm. and, like, It was so wonderful. And I remember when we were planning this trip, we were talking to you and you were like, you're going to want to spend quite a few days in Olympic to see all the different parts. So you were like, come back another time and do North Cascades so that you can give that park its due and you can give the other two parks there the time that you really, you know, because I can't imagine what it would be like to have done Olympic and not be able to do the coast of Olympic.
We used to, when we were in high school, there's a 50-mile stretch of beach out there that you can backpack down, and it's quite wild. And at the time that I did it, we would you'd have to climb up over all these big rocky heads in the forest, and then you could drop to the beach and walk along the beach for several miles. Then, oops, there's another one you got to climb up and over and get down. And the difficulty was that you had to watch the tidal charts, because you had to be out of certain sections, of course, when the tide came in, and make sure you were up on the heads, you know, getting over the headland and not stuck with the water coming in too far. And we got stuck one time, kind of wading through waist-deep water there to get to the trail and climb up. So bad timing on our parts, but
yeah, that was definitely cool something experience. That I was keeping my eye on with the tides when we were out there.
Oh yeah,
because I was
like,
I don't mess with the ocean. I have a very healthy fear of the ocean, and
we
I love
need to
it.
Talk
but,
about. Mm-hmm. I have to bring this up. When we were in the Airbnb in Forks, Mike had, like, a bit of an existential crisis when it came to, like, planning the day around tides. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just like trying to spin it in so many ways.
We were trying to do three things on this day.
That was the day we did three things. That was the day we did the Ho Rainforest, we did Rialto Beach, and we did Ozette Triangle, which that was a very long day. Very full day. we recommend everybody do all three of those things mm-hmm. because they are all three so wonderful and special. And we're so glad that you were like, no, you should really do Ozette Triangle. And we're so glad we didn't miss Ozette Triangle. But yeah, Mike was on, he had been sort of like, he's like, yeah, we could do it like this. We could do it like this. We could do it like this. We get back to the Airbnb. Like I shower and come back.
I'm just spinning out on the couch.
Starting dinner. And he's like, still just spinning out. He's like, okay, this is what I think we should do. And I literally was like, are you still on this? Like, what is going on? Like, what have, and he was like, I just want to make sure that like we cover everything and like, it's a good experience. And I was like, it's going to be a great experience regardless of what order we get in.
It was tide concern was what it was.
It was all mm-hmm. about tide concern mm-hmm. and timing. Mm-hmm. So now we know like my sensitive area is when it comes to like time and food, and Mike's is around time and tides.
They wait for no man. Oh, time and tide.
This is true.
So yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
So yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Growing up in the Pacific Northwest with that coastline and then being able to come over to the east side of the country over here to do the Florida coastline and Acadia and sort of just like, what were some distinct differences that you pulled out of those things?
Well, the coastline in Acadia was so different than, you know, the Olympic Coast or Puget Sound coastal stuff and that I grew up with. It just, I know we talked about the tide pools at Acadia earlier, and what I thought was so, it just blew me away was the fact that they were in that pink granite. They weren't, I'm used to the tide pools that are, you know, there's just piles of rock and rubble and all of that around the tide pools, and then you get to the tide pool and here's a starfish and all this kind of stuff, but they were like these contained little microcosms or something that were just beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Full habitats inside of these, like inside like of the these depressed areas of the pink granite.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd never seen that before. And I just thought that was something else. Just amazing.
You know what's funny is like seeing those first, I went, oh, this is what tide pools are. Like this is what, that's like the bar I set it at. Or like that was my expectation. Then we got to Olympic and I was like, oh, these tide pools are so different. Like sometimes it's just sort of like what ends up landing here in this area for this period of time. Or, you know, we could see some sort of habitats growing inside of like small depressed areas of rock, but nothing like the stuff in the pink granite.
That was, I feel like we got that more at Hole in the Wall on Rialto Beach. That's where it mm-hmm. felt a little bit more like Here's rock slabs with small environments.
Oh,
in
the
them,
rock slabby
as opposed
stuff.
To like Shy Shy Beach, where we were really just like, oh, here's just like here's a pile of rocks and here's some starfish on the rock, like, and here's some things, some anemones under it. But it's not really like a. It's like, you know, it wasn't really a specific long-lasting landscape. It was for the time being. It was ephemeral. Talk to us about your experience, especially because we've experienced Glacier with you, and we now know that actually Glacier is not the park for glaciers. It is Mount Rainier.
Mount Rainier,
which we also
in Glacier.
Got to experience
oh,
with
yeah.
you. But obviously glaciers are very much so a Western phenomenon, like landscape feature that some you are still able to view and see for how long, who knows, darkness, and others we know were there or they've been there within the last few decades but are now gone and have left remnants through moraine or what have you. But how do you see glaciation? Because obviously there was a great deal of the states covered in during the Ice Age in glaciers. So how do you see that? How do you see that difference kind of play out east versus west?
Well, it's you know, it's obvious when you look at Mount Rainier, Mount Olympus in the Olympics, several of the peaks in the North Cascades, Glacier Park, a little bit in the Tetons, that, you know, the glaciers are kind of in select areas. But the effects of the glacial age is evident in the eastern parks, too. That was one of those things because I always key in on what's going, what, how did stuff get here? How did this landscape happen? That kind of stuff. I'm always interested in that. And of course, in these, the north half of the western part of the country, that's your answer for just about everything. It's glacier. Well, in the east side, it's it turns out it's kind of the same thing. And do you remember when we, the day we hiked in Acadia, we did Nubble and then...
Nubble to Bubble?
Bubble. Yes. I can't remember which one. North Bubble, then South Bubble. Okay. And we finished on South Bubble. And there was a slanted rock that we were on. And there was this giant rock. We were standing on the pink granite. And then there was this giant rock that was about the size of an SUV just perched on kind of the slope there. And I remember all of us commenting that it looks like we could just touch it and it would fall off. But it was, you know, it weighed a couple tons. But it was clearly different rock. And so in my head, I looked at it and went, oh, that's an erratic. And an erratic is rock that glaciers move from one area to another. As they move, they carry rock along. And then as they melt, they just drop the rock wherever it is. And so when I got home, I looked it up because, of course, I had to know. And it came from 30 miles north of Acadia via glaciers. And that whole area we were hiking in on the bubbles there, you know, we were looking down on Jordan Pond from there. That was all a glacier carved system that came through there that made it. And so the mountains there basically have their shape because of glaciers. And the fact that that erratic is just sitting there on South Bubble, it's a statement to those glaciers being there. And I just thought that was really fun to find out about that.
It's fascinating to like think about, and I guess a lot of it has to do, I'd imagine, with elevation, that the West has held on to their glaciers, whereas the East, they've all just dissipated. And I'm assuming it's a lot of it has to do with elevation and just the range of the mountain and being able to kind of insulate that glacier. And there's really, we don't have that out East.
Well, I think there's a lot of factors going into it too, which would be climate and temperatures and all of that is an effect of it too. But it's, you know, all of them out here are melting fast. And when we didn't go to Sunrise with you guys because the road wasn't open yet. But the Emmons Glacier that comes down there, I remember hiking up along the moraine of it when I was in high school. We just basically, there wasn't a trail. We just basically climbed on the moraine and walked and walked. Well, that glacier, the last time I saw it, which was probably 10 years ago, I was on that. On a hike above it, looking down, I was totally shocked that how far back it had melted. And it was probably easily a mile further up valley than where it had been when I was in high school. Now that just dated me age-wise, but you know, it's shocking to see that stuff happen.
A mile is hugely significant for a glacier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all changing. And I don't know if you saw my post this morning on Instagram, but it was a glacier dying, you know, the remnants of what's left of it. And it's one that, again, I remember when I was in college working in the park. I remember hiking by it and thinking, oh, that's pretty cool. And it's now three little meltwater ponds and a couple pieces of snow and ice around it. And that's it.
Not only one girl, dark girl on this podcast, there's two.
Apparently. Another thing that I'm kind of fascinated by, and we got into this when we did a whole thing about like the science. Well, we talked about it when we talked about the science of the Tetons and like all the different kinds of mountain ranges that we have here in this land, also called the United States, is that the relation to volcanoes, the east side versus the west side's sort of like...
Vulcan activity.
Yeah, Vulcan activity, if you will, because like there are parts of the Northeast, there are sections of mountain that are... We're not volcanoes, but we're created from underground volcanic activity, but we're never fully, there was never an opening, nothing ever came out. So like they were never considered volcanoes. Yet, however, Mount Rainier is a volcano. Lassen is a volcano. Mount St. Helens is a volcano. And there's so many volcanoes.
Ring like, of Fire, baby.
The Ring of Fire is all up over there. So I'm like, I'm wondering a little bit about like, in the West, is there a sort of like, is there a differentiation between like, it is a volcano versus it isn't when it comes to like people's engagement with it? Or is it sort of just like, we've kind of accepted volcanoes as mountains now?
I'd say it's the latter. And that's mostly because most of the volcanoes here in the West are not active. And what I said that wrong. They have minor activity going on. Like Lassen, there's a section of Lassen that looks like Yellowstone because it's got, you know, mud pots burbling and steam vents and fumaroles and all kinds of stuff like that. And then you've got Yellowstone with its geysers. That's all volcanic stuff. But we don't have the lava eruption stuff that's happening over in Hawaii, in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park. So that makes a difference a little bit in terms of how people view them. And it's not like you can, you know, you can see Rainier from Seattle, all kinds of places in Seattle. And it's not like you look at Rainier and go, oh, look, there's a pile of steam coming out the top, or it's, you know, it's got all these vents letting it off. But so I think people more accept it as it just is what it is. Now, Mount St. Helens, which you guys got to see from, you know, off in the distance from one of our hikes at Rainier. I was in college when that erupted. No, actually, I wasn't. I was out of college, probably in my 30s, 20s, late 20s. And that was weird, you know, because it shot ash all over the state. And my grandmother had at least a foot of ash in her yard in Yakima. But it was just kind of a thing that happened. We knew well in advance it was going to happen. It was just a matter of which minute is it going to go? You know, is the eruption going to happen and it's going to blow its whole top off? Yeah, so people just kind of, it is what it is. And there are volcanoes there. And most of them, there's not much activity with them going on. And they are all, the big ones that do have activity, the USGS does monitor what's going on. So it's not like it's going to be kaboom one day, there's a big surprise, and one of them erupts all over the place.
It's not a Dante's Peak situation.
No.
I love that movie. In my curriculum as a first grader, there was a whole unit on the eruption of Mount St. Helens.
Was there really?
Yes.
Wow.
It was wild. And I don't know if this was my teacher just being like, I'm going to make sure these first graders know things that are going on. And like, we're learning about volcanoes and I want to make sure we understand something that's close to home and fairly recent. But like, oh yeah, we had to do it. We spent a whole week learning about the eruption of Mount St. Helens, like listening to interviews with people who were there, like reading all of these, you know, I mean, we were first graders, so we were learning how to read, but it was like reading about people's experience, like reading from like what other kids had written about it and all this kind of stuff. And like seeing a lot of pictures and like, we definitely had to like, I feel like we had to like write, we had to do some kind of activity where we had to like write, like imagine that we were there watching it and like describing what we would see, like all that kind of stuff. And it was
this is why therapy exists
apparently. But yeah. But yeah, we I do remember though getting to high school and talking about Mount St. Helens and people had never heard of it before, and I was like, yeah, it erupted. It was like a whole big thing, like you didn't, and like people just don't know. People just don't know. And I'm like, huh. I mean, I have my first grade teacher to thank for that, because thinking back on it, like that's one of the only sort of like outdoor nature other than like, you know, general science class that was like hyper specific about like natural spaces here in America.
Not only do we have a special guest, but we have a special game master with us today who decided that she was going to write a game for us.
That's right.
Which is fun because we don't often get to play the game.
No.
Together.
Because we're always planning the
game.
Yeah,
we're always planning the game. So thank you for this.
You might not even like the game.
Wow.
Oh, I think we're going to like it because we love games.
Okay.
It'll be good.
So it's trivia about national parks, of course. Mm-hmm. And it's a game of fives. However, we're only going to do four rounds because I didn't have time to come up with a fifth round of it. So the way this works is I'm going to give you a category and you have to name the five national parks. And sometimes there's way more than five, but you have to name five national parks that fit that category. And then part two is you have to figure out the opposite of that category and figure out the five national parks that fit that category.
Okay. Great.
Does that make sense?
Oh, I love games that are involved.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
So let's start with it. We're going to start with some of the easier ones.
Okay.
Okay, great.
So the first category is underground water carving.
Okay.
Underground water okay. carving.
So that would be Mammoth Cave.
Mammoth Cave.
Wind Cave.
Wind Cave. Carlsbad Caverns.
Yes.
What else? We can do it. We can come up with two more. Underground water carving. I'm curious if Biscayne is included there.
No.
No. Okay.
Yellowstone?
No. Okay. No. I think, and I could be wrong, you've been to the park.
Okay. Underground water
carving. The two I'm thinking of that are left, you've been to one, but not the other.
Would.
Oh my gosh.
Olympic.
No.
No.
Now we're just throwing things into the...
One of them is close to, I think you have hiked Morro Rock.
Oh, Sequoia?
Yes.
Kings Canyon?
Yes.
Okay.
Kings Canyon has some underground water carving.
That's
interesting.
Good to know.
Crystal Cave. Yeah.
Okay.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other one I know, I don't think you've been to. Mm-hmm. I went to last September.
Was it Lassen?
No, it was the other one.
Great Basin.
Yes.
Ah,
yes.
Great Basin
has Lehman Caves system.
Okay. Yes. There, we talked about this.
So. Okay, great.
Okay. So then the opposite would be above ground water carving.
Correct. So where
so
do you
this
go
would
with
be
that?
Canyons.
Correct.
So Grand Canyon, New River Gorge, Black Canyon of the Gunnison, Zion.
Bryce Canyon.
Yep.
No, not Bryce.
No on Bryce, because it's not water. The water hasn't carved that canyon, right?
No, it's the carving all comes from moisture that gets in the rock and then freezes and fractures the rock. So it's not like a river going through it at all.
Okay, so we.
But
so
you did you? What did you say? Zion, Black Zion, Canyon of the Gunnison, Grand Canyon, and
New River Gorge.
You said so. One more.
What about would Big Bend have some carving? I mean, it's not really a canyon, but there are some. Santa Elena. Yeah.
I didn't even think of that one. Yeah. But yeah, I would count Santa Elena definitely. In,
okay.
I would
the other
also
canyon.
The other canyon
the other
on the
area,
other side. Bokeos. Yeah. Yeah. Bokeos Canyon. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, there's also like when we were in Mount Rainier, there were those like sort of circular areas like where the water was coming through and like it was, you were explaining how like, anyway, so I wasn't sure if that was also considered water carving.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
anytime water is carving rock, that's what you get.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Very cool. Okay, cool. All right. You want the second round?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. This one, your category is sand dunes.
Okay.
Great.
Okay. Indiana dunes.
Okay.
White sands.
Great sand dunes. And then Acadia sand dunes or Olympic. I guess, I don't know if they have official dunes though.
And I'm not sure if I know one of the parks none of us have been to. And
Isle Royale.
Voyagers?
There's one that I think you've been to, but I'm not sure.
Ooh. Sand dunes.
I went to it a year and a half ago. Two winters ago.
Would it have been is it Death Valley?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, well, Death Valley, yes, of course.
There's mesquite sand dunes in there that are just, you know, here you are in the middle of the valley, and then all of a sudden, big pile of sand dunes.
Okay.
So.
And then, I don't know what the fifth one would be.
Okay, I'll give you a big hint on this one.
In Alaska?
Yes. And that's why it's a total surprise, because you would never assume there'd be sand dunes there.
Is it St. Elias? Is it Wrangell St. Elias?
I don't think so. No.
No?
Is it Kenai Fjords?
No.
Gates of the Arctic?
Oh, you're so close.
Oh, we just have like one more.
What's is it? It's not Colby. It's another K one.
You're on it. Yes.
What is
you
it?
Want some help?
Yeah.
It's Kobuk Valley.
Kobuk Valley.
It's
okay.
This just west of Gates of the Arctic. Yeah, okay. And that's one of those parks that you got to totally fly into. You can't. You know, there's no trails, no nothing. Right. You just get in there and there's a pile of sand dunes.
Okay. So the opposite of sand dunes would be?
No sand dunes?
So water, ocean parks?
No. Think about what sand is.
Glass? I mean, it's silica. Okay.
Sort of.
Quartz?
Well, yeah, it can be any of those. I mean, so you got.
So would it be rocks?
So go the total opposite. What sort of rock is really solid?
It's not. Is it igneous rock?
Granite.
So granite. Okay. Granite. So okay.
Yeah.
That's right. Igneous Rock was the band that I came up with on in Acadia in the
Cove. That's true. That's true. So, and we do know that there is granite in Acadia. I feel like I'm wondering, is there granite in Shenandoah?
I don't think so.
I don't know.
But I could be wrong about that.
Glacier?
No, not even close. Okay. Glaciers, cool. I'll give you a hint here.
The disappointment was palpable.
Yes. No, Glacier is definitely a big pile of sedimentary, crumbly rock. So if you think about granite, it's the rock climber's paradise.
So New River Gorge.
Yes. It's got some, but it's also got some other harder rocks with quartz and stuff.
Tetons?
Yes. What's interesting there is it's the top part of the Tetons.
Huh. Oh. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Oh my God. And I think you've been to at least two more that have it.
Okay. I'm sure we have. Rocky Mountain?
Rocky Mountain does have granite too. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
And then I don't feel like Smokies has granite.
No.
And then...
What about... Hot springs?
Honestly, I don't know. So maybe. Okay. Maybe. Go west. Hmm. Go west and.
Okay. Go west, young man. Go west, young man.
Well, is Rainier, does Rainier have granite?
Think no. Rock climbing meccas.
Yosemite.
Yes.
Yosemite.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then also Yosemite go further south and what's the next big rock climbing mecca? Southern California.
Joshua Tree.
Yes.
Ah,
so, yeah, okay. Granite makes for really good rock climbing because it's solid. It's not like Glacier where you can pick up your handhold, pull it out, look at it, and put it back in it. Glacier, that's bad. So, yeah. Okay, good job.
Love that.
Okay, here's the third one, and it's going to get harder.
Oh, great.
Great.
We're ready. We love this
Thank
game.
You.
Okay, this one is the oldest mountains.
Oh, okay.
The oldest mountains. So what I do know, there's one answer that I'm going to say for going in the opposite direction, which are the youngest mountains.
Okay. Well, save it.
I'm going to save it for them. Okay, great. So oldest mountains.
Smokies.
Yes.
Rocky Mountain.
Yes.
Olympic.
Yeah. There's a huge list of possibilities. Oh, for
Rainier.
This one, so. Rainier, no.
North Cascades.
I got to think about that one. Possibly, yeah.
Glacier,
definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's very old. You got to get one more. There's one more in your area.
Acadia.
No.
Shenandoah. Okay.
Yeah. And actually, Great Smoky and Shenandoah are the oldest. Their mountains were built probably 200 to 300 million years ago.
Right. They were supposed to be. I mean, they've just whittled down over time, right?
Correct.
They were taller than the Rockies, right? Currently are? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And they've gotten erosion that you were talking about earlier has happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the newest
So the newest.
Rainier.
The youngest
Rainier
mountains.
Can go in this category. Yes.
Grand Tetons.
That's such a toughie. Tetons is the youngest range in the Rockies. However, if we want to make it more like 1 million or less years ago, it wouldn't fit.
Okay, so Rainier is in the youngest.
Acadia, Cadillac Mountain.
I don't think so. Although that's glaciation that made that, so that would make it maybe. I'll give you a maybe point on that one.
Okay. So yes. Rainier is what we've got so far.
We've got Rainier.
What about Guadalupe Mountains?
No. Oh. Think about what Rainier is, and then you'll get the rest of it.
It's a volcano.
Yes.
Okay, so
Lassen.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is probably the youngest all of them.
Oh, all right.
Okay. So that's two.
So other parks that have volcanic mountains.
Is the Chisos, this Big Bend with the Chisos, are those young? No.
Oh my God. Well, is Mount Whitney young? But that's not that's technically in a national park. That's in Sequoia.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it in Sequoia?
You know, it probably is old because most of the Sierra is about 40 million years old.
Okay, so okay. That was in our old category.
Just stick with your volcano thought.
Okay, Crater Lake.
Yes. Okay, what else?
Olympic.
No, Olympic is one of the oldest.
Oh, Olympic was old. Okay.
What about like Hawaii volcanoes, like those mountains?
Yeah, and Haleakala.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, there's two more. Great. Okay, you got your five. Perfect. You could have said just about any of the parks in Alaska, too.
Oh, okay. I keep forgetting about those.
Yeah, because they're all volcanic. Okay, last category. This one is most arid deserts, excluding the cold deserts of the Utah and Colorado Plateau.
Most arid deserts, excluding the Utah and Colorado Plateau. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Which are cold deserts, so they're definitely different than these arid deserts.
Arid deserts.
So, Big Bend?
Yes.
Okay.
Death Valley?
Yes.
Joshua Tree?
Yes.
Is White Sands count?
Yep.
Okay.
Great. No, not Great
Guadalupe Sands. Mountains?
Yep. There's your five.
Okay, so the wettest parks then.
Which are going to be parks that have high percentage of water.
Okay, so
parks with high percentage of water.
Everything we talked about when we talked about coastal parks.
Yeah. Okay, so Channel Islands?
No.
Oh, okay. So it's in the park, not necessarily surrounding it?
Correct. It's actually within the park boundary. It's got the highest percentage of water.
So Virgin Islands?
Yes, that's 40% water.
Biscayne?
95% water for Biscayne. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
What about Everglades?
You know, I would say yes, but I could never find out the percentage.
Okay.
But they have that whole 10,000 island part on the east or on the west side that's just ton of water there.
Isle Royale?
No, it's got a little bit of water.
What about Dry Tortugas?
That's the winner. It's 99% water.
Wow.
The rest is little tiny islands surrounding it all. Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Okay. It's wild when, like, I do love when, like, water is just essentially the national park is water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, you got one more to go.
Great. So we got one more. We got to name one more.
Oh, I thought we had two.
Well, we're giving you Everglades because we all think it's got a lot of water.
I said New River Gorge. Mm-hmm. No.
And would be percentage of water compared to land is what it is.
Yeah.
For that park.
Not Voyagers.
Oh, yes, Voyagers.
Oh, great. There we go.
Voyagers.
Yeah, it's 40% water. And it's all those lakes. It's got those three giant lakes, and then it's got a gazillion little lakes in it. So, that one's weird because it's an inland one that has all that water. So, nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you for such a fun game. This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. And that's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariello Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.